All right. A, I'm really glad that we got to the bottom of that. And B, we also got to the bottom of what a cloaca is.
I was already at the bottom. I already knew.
No, you didn't.
Just clarifying for you because you said they had the three-hole punch.
Okay. No. And welcome, everyone, to the Four Corners Crime Cast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm your host, Katie. And today we're going to be talking about James Holmes, who was the perpetrator of the Aurora, Colorado Century 16 mass shooting.
It's because I was getting prepped to do my Bane voice.
I
was born in the dark. You merely adopted it.
That was pretty good.
James Holmes is the murderer.
Speaking of Bane, let's talk about another destructive piece of shit, James Holmes.
James Egan Holmes. He was born on December 13th, 1987 in La Jolla, California to Arlene and Robert Holmes. James, who went by Jimmy as a child, lived a normal, almost perfect childhood. When asked to describe his home life later on, he simply states, "Lots of hugs." He hit every developmental milestone at the appropriate age and was incredibly smart. His grade school teachers all remembered him as smart, sweet, and popular. So, super normal as a child.
So, like the American dream child type thing?
Basically. Parents made good money, good house, had a sister. A few of his family members suffered from severe mental illness, which is known to be genetic and run in families. His father's twin sister had what Robert Holmes described as some variety of schizophrenia. James' grandfather, on his father's side, had a history of psychiatric care for obsessive compulsive disorder, and his grandfather on his mother's side also suffered from depression and bouts of psychosis.
So where did he fall with all of this? What's his game plan?
He was prone to this shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously in his blood. Where does he lie on this area? Did anything show up? Because, I mean, he's obviously a smart, sweet little kid.
It differs. Some people say, or some psychiatrists say, that he had schizoid personality disorder. Some say he had schizotypal personality disorder. So it depends on who you ask. But he definitely had some form of OCD and some form of anxiety and probably some depression. He just didn't like to own up to that part.
So he's just got, like, the winning mixture of all this stuff.
Basically.
Okay.
Not that we are judging mental illness.
No, that's why I said it was a winning mixture. I mean, it's just the right level of mental illnesses to make you take that next step.
By 1996, at age 8, James was taken to see his therapist for the first time. His parents say that he was having trouble socializing and throwing stuffed animals around their home. His counselor diagnosed him with oppositional defiant disorder, which is a pretty common diagnosis for children having any sort of mood or behavior issue. It's kind of just slapped onto most kids.
I wonder if you would have been diagnosed with this.
I was just going to say, I used to punch my stuffed animals and throw them across the room like it was WWE.
I mean, I did that too. I even had one of those little Hulk dolls. Actually, it was my little brother's, but he had one of those little Hulk dolls you could wrestle that would make noise. You'd do like elbow drops on it.
Anyway. And I just had a Tickle Me Elmo.
It is totally normal for young boys, especially to be somewhat violent in their childhood.
So, can this oppositional defiant disorder be... oppositional defiant disorder be defined as like an actual
illness? They call it odd. They say they're just a little odd.
I mean, it's only occurring age 8 and under generally. So you grow out of it basically.
Okay.
So you have it when you're a kid and then when you grow up you get
it just
over
goes
it
away. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
I probably did have it then.
Or it turns into something else obviously like this guy.
Yeah. His turned a little darker. All right, Katie. So he's 8 years old. He's got disorders. How does that lead into him becoming a crazy person?
Outwardly, he was never super crazy. Like, to anybody that really knew him, including therapists, they never saw severe mental illness. He comes off like a totally normal guy.
So if we were to compare him to, say, Loeffner and how people were trying to get him to go to psychiatrist or whatnot, and people were like, already knew this was a thing. People were worried about him shooting up Pima. There wasn't the signs like with this guy?
No. There was really nothing. He was super... I mean, he isolated a lot, and he was really socially awkward. But in the position that he is or was in, and we'll get into that, it was not anything that people really batted an eye at.
Okay, so go on.
So after he saw that therapist for 3 times, his parents noted improved behavior, and the therapy ended. 2 years later, around age 10, James began having dark, intrusive thoughts of nuclear bombs going off. He claims they usually only came during his downtime, such as before falling asleep. By the end of the 99-2000 school year, close to May, the Holmeses packed their belongings and moved to Rancho Penasquitos, just north of San Diego.
Now, in Spanish, that means ranch of little mosquitoes?
Mm-hmm. That's how I figured out how to pronounce it.
Yeah, you just translated it?
No.
Into English? Yeah. Ranch of thousand little mosquitoes.
Ranch of go fuck yourself.
All right. Penisquitos. Ranch of the penisquitos.
I think they meant to say penis taquitos. It was a dude ranch.
It's just a dude ranch. Because you know cowboys love
penis taquitos.
Penis taquitos for those caballeros out there.
All right, so they went to the ranch of the penis taquitos. Yes. And what?
This move is one of the first triggering factors in James's already deteriorating mental health. James never quite settled into his new life or school in Rancho Penisquitos.
Penis taquitos!
Having trouble making new friends and increasingly isolating himself. His parents seek counseling again for him in 2001 when he is 14. The records from his sessions are destroyed, so we do not know exactly what occurred during his sessions.
Was this before or after 9/11? Do you know?
2001. Oh, I'm getting what you're putting down there.
I don't know.
Because his little dreams of bombs blowing up and stuff, and nuclear holocaust could have actually fueled a little bit of his psychoses.
It's possible, yeah, but I'm not sure exactly when he started counseling again.
Okie dokie.
By high school, James's intrusive thoughts have moved from nuclear bombs to active thoughts of death, destruction, and him killing people. He denies that these thoughts were ever about specific people and says that he never hated anyone in particular. He also becomes increasingly socially awkward and anxious, freezing completely when placed in uncomfortable situations. Originally, he says that when his movement, expressions, and speech froze, so did his mind, but as he went through high school, the freezing would be accompanied by violent mental images. He went through all of high school believing he was crazy, isolating himself more and more so people wouldn't think he was different.
You know what's weird? Is I used to have weird thoughts like this in high school. Like this one time I was sitting behind this really like bigger girl, and I just had this weird like daydream where I kind of like blanked out, and I was just spooning chunks of fat off of her back and eating it with like a grapefruit spoon.
Intrusive thoughts are like incredibly normal.
Okay, yeah.
So aside from that would be incredibly frightening to just like freeze up and you just start seeing freaky shit.
People dying, yeah. You killing people.
Yeah, that would be frightening. Maybe not quite as frightening as using a melon baller to eat chunks of fat out of a fat
little
girl's
baby
back.
Rory it, just staring off into space all creepy.
It was a grapefruit spoon. And it was just like four or five big bites.
What the fuck is a grapefruit spoon, Rory, you old-timey hick?
Were you one of the kids in high school that everyone was worried was going to shoot up the school?
Of course not. I was so nice. I was such a nice person.
That sounds so fake.
Rory was like that.
I was so nice, guys. Don't worry about it.
When Jay dances and moshes to metal in Jay and Silent Bob, I think it is, or it might be Clerks 2. Either way, that was just Rory in high school.
No, in high school, I was a little punk rock kid. Like,
yeah, exactly. Dancing like a
I didn't.
Fucking
no one
moron.
Thought. Well, actually, there was probably a time in my like sophomore year.
Safety pins.
Where, safety pins were on everything. I pierced my ears with safety pins. I wore this battle jacket, and I had a big old anti-flag patch on the back.
Of course you did.
So, I mean, there were probably times where people were like, that's the kid's going to shoot up the school, but I wasn't like
No, they were like, that's the kid that's going to shoot up the mosque.
No way. Well, maybe after I shaved my head, but that wasn't like a couple, that wasn't for a couple years till after that. Yeah, that's weird. But, so I kind of understand intrusive thoughts, so like it's basically normal for this kid to be having these thoughts, just not in the manner that he's having them.
Basically, not to the intensity that he's having them. Some people don't like to talk about it, obviously Jake doesn't, but literally everybody has intrusive thoughts, and you can't control them. I mean, everyone's been driving down the street and been like, what if I swerved over there? It would kill me, and I would kill a bunch of people. Like, that happens to everybody. In 2006... James began attending the University of California at Riverside. He branched out more, attending the occasional party, but still kept a very small group of friends. None of the people that knew him ever noticed anything wrong with him, and no one ever saw him angry. He was still having violent thoughts, but had learned how to suppress them.
That's how you know that I'll never do something like this, because everybody gets to see my anger outbursts on a regular basis.
Yeah, I heard it the other day at work.
I don't keep it pent up.
Wasn't that today?
No, that was yesterday.
Oh.
So he's socializing. He's a social creature. He's trying to be a normal, productive member of society, going to the University of California, Riverside.
Mm-hmm. UC Riverside.
And he has intrusive thoughts, but he hides them, so he's able to make friends. What drives him to be full-blown cuckoo bananas, shoot up the Dark Knight?
I think probably more than cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
He was never that crazy. Like, he legitimately was never, like, outwardly.
I mean, he shot up crazy. A place, so.
He was, yeah. I mean, he did that, but he was never, like, outwardly, like, Jared Loughner talking to himself in the corner of a library crazy.
So, let's draw a line in the sand here. Katie, is he crazy? Is he a crazy person? Is this something done because he has some sort of mental
No. He knew what he was doing. He 100% intended it. His mental illness played a role in it. But it is not why he did it. He did it because he wanted to do it.
Okay.
And he had always loved children, and he spent a lot of his time volunteering at an orphanage or working at a summer camp. And that later comes into play when he selects the location for his mass shooting.
Because he wanted to kill kids, or he didn't want to kill kids?
Didn't want to kill kids.
So he went to a PG-13 rated movie?
It was at midnight.
Midnight showing.
I don't give a fuck still. Go fuck yourself, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. After college, he begins applying for graduate school for his PhD in neuroscience. The only school that contacted him for an interview was the University of Irvine, but they rejected him as well as every other college he applied to.
Was that because he was an idiot?
No, he was actually relatively smart. He was just weird. He did really terrible, because when you apply for grad school, you take a bunch of exams, and then you actually have to go do an interview with someone. What?
Well, I'm just imagining that he's taking these tests, and he's having these freeze up moments, and he just starts writing down all this shit on his test about killing people and like doing mass this and that, and I'm just picturing why he failed his tests. And
he passed all of his tests. He just did really terribly in interviews. He was really, really weird to be around, so most of the colleges were like, nah, we're
good. They're like, so where do you see yourself fitting in here at in college life? And he was like,
probably just shooting the shit with everybody.
I was going to say, he was like, well, I like to go to movies and, you know, I think about weird dark stuff all the time. I'm really excited for Bane in this next Batman movie.
He also applied for multiple jobs and never got a call back from any of those either. Eventually, his mother threatened to kick him out of the house if he did not get a job or go back to school. He finally got a job at a factory coding vitamin pills, but quit after about 3 months because someone was slightly bullying him. They were being a little mean and he couldn't handle it.
They probably got sick of watching him come on the vitamins.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a super sensitive boy like that and someone tells you that, you know, you need to stop coming on vitamins, it'll hurt your feelings.
That's not the right protein coating on that.
No, we coat them with plastic, not your jisms, please.
Although it does look like the same color.
You know, you could probably get away with two or three, but just no more than that per day.
Yeah, mix them in.
Mix them in.
One shoot in the morning. One big shoot in the morning.
Yeah, just get her done.
In 2011, he applied for more graduate schools and got a call back from an interview from two. He accepted the offer from University of Colorado and flew out to Aurora, where he moved into an apartment by himself. Because of the nature of most all science majors, especially neuroscience, professors and students alike didn't really notice anything wrong with James. It wasn't abnormal for some students to be quiet and socially awkward, and no one suspected that he could be violent.
So he's just a quiet, nerdy kid, kind of?
Basically.
Okay.
He just fit into the stereotypical quiet, awkward.
So shy white kid.
Basically, yeah.
No one even thought twice about it.
James struggled with his schoolwork, often leaving labs early or not paying any attention during his lectures. He was interested in the study of the human brain, but before you can do that, you must study much smaller animals' brains, like gerbils, hamsters, mice, etc. So it's difficult to really tell if he was struggling because of the material and it really not pertaining to his interest, or he was just so deeply wrapped up in his intrusive thoughts that he had trouble paying any attention in class. By late February or early March 2012, things began to severely deteriorate for James, but not outwardly. Along with his violent thoughts, he also began to see shadows in the shape of humans that weren't really there. He would usually notice them in his peripheral vision, but if he turned towards them, they would stay. Some of the shadows were holding guns, and some were juggling human heads. On March 16th, James sought a therapist. In his first session, he tells her he wants to, quote, kill other people, but no one in particular. She gives him a diagnosis of OCD and says that he is not a danger to others. She refers him out to a psychiatrist, and during his first meeting with the psychiatrist, James tells her that the one solution to his, quote, biological problem would be to eliminate it with homicide, but since he couldn't kill everyone, it wouldn't be effective.
And they didn't see him as a danger to anybody.
So are we basically saying that therapy is kind of bullshit for the most part?
You want to go out on that branch, Roar?
Well, I'm just saying, like, this lady's like, oh, you're just obsessive compulsive. Get out of here. I'm going to refer you to someone else who specializes.
I think that has more to do with the particular doctor that was seen in that instance. Just being lazy, probably.
But, I mean, it's all just guesswork. Like, this dude, oh, well, you have symptoms of this.
But
no one really understands the brain like that. Therapy is just, you know.
That's why it takes years to get people's meds right. Because you have to fucking experiment with it till you figure out what works.
Well, this wasn't even like a, this was just like a therapist. This isn't a psychiatrist or psychologist or anything.
The first one was a therapist. The second one that he sees for a longer period of time is a psychiatrist.
Okay, so he's going to see a psychiatrist now.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So his psychiatrist notes that he has no specific plans, targets, or suicidal thoughts, and he's not a danger. She diagnoses him with schizoid personality disorder, OCD, and anxiety, and prescribes him an anti-anxiety and antidepressant, telling him to come back in a week.
So after that week, how is he feeling? Do we know if he was doing any better? Are the drugs, like, slowly working their way in, helping with any of this?
No, not really.
Okay.
By this point, even his communication with his friends is becoming more cryptic. In one text conversation, James says something about wanting to, quote, do evil. When his friend inquires what kind of evil exactly, James's reply is simply, kill people, of course. He tells another friend his life would be meaningful if he had more human capital. Idea is basically that every person has one point, and if you killed that person, you got their point, and the more human capital points you collected, the more your own life was worth.
So basically, it's he wants to live Call of Duty.
It was around this time that he chooses a location for his mass shooting, the Century 16 movie theater in Aurora. Chose this location for the amount of people that will be there and decides to do it at midnight to avoid children being in the theater.
Real upstanding guy.
Yeah, thoughtful dude.
By early April 2012, James has broken up with his girlfriend, which she had absolutely nothing to do with this. He dated her for a couple months and they were like good friends in grad school, but they were mostly just like really weirdly close friends, and she did all the talking and he kind of blurted in every once in a while. I mean, his close group of friends, he did say that he quit being friends with them because he didn't want them associated with a murderer.
He's such a kind, thoughtful soul.
So that they could be like, oh yeah, I used to know that guy, instead of like, yeah, I sucked his dick 3 days ago.
Katie breaks up with his best friends because he doesn't want them to be friends with the murderer. Where does he go next?
He begins texting a girl, heavily flirting with her and taking her on a hiking date later that day, which was like totally random because he has no friends and he's super socially awkward, but he all of a sudden can branch out. She said that he was like super talkative and, you know, like complimented her all the time when they're out, which is just not normal James, which she didn't know this obviously, but to everybody else seeing it, it's just weird.
He's just wearing a mask.
He was just being a fuckboy.
James sees his psychiatrist again on April 17th, and she notes that his homicidal intention is still high. She bumps his diagnosis up to schizotypal personality disorder, which is similar to schizoid personality disorder, but with more obvious delusions and paranoia. She's concerned with his talk of homicide, but he never tells her he has any plans or targets and gives her barely enough information for her to think that he might have ideas of homicide, but isn't going to do anything. Unfortunately, she's wrong.
Dead wrong.
The first week of May 2012, James buys his first weapons on Amazon, a taser and a Smith & Wesson folding knife. He tried buying a Glock through a website, but he never received it in the mail.
Because you have to go through a dealer.
Yeah, you can't just order guns online. America's great, just not that great yet.
But we're going to make it that great.
Mm-hmm. It was that great at one time, so we have to make it that great again.
Definitely.
Make it that great again. I think that's a good slogan for a campaign.
On May 10th, he buys two grenade-style canisters of tear gas and a gas mask. On May 22nd, he buys a Glock 40 caliber at a sporting goods store, along with hollow-point bullets for it. In his writing, James refers to his plan of mass shooting as the mission, believing that killing as many people as possible would stop his depression and him killing himself. He later says, quote, it was necessary to do what was in my best interest.
So he needed to rack up his kill points before he went out, and then he was going to kill himself?
No, he thought killing people was going to make him not want to kill himself anymore.
Oh, so he's trying to use it as a therapy. He's saying that it's the only way he can keep from killing himself.
Is to kill
to
people.
To kill other mother.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong choice there, bucko. We here at the Four Corners Crime Cast do not condone suicide unless the other side of that is you going out and shooting up any place.
At that point, kill yourself.
Please do the world a favor.
On May 28th, he buys a Remington 12-gauge tactical shotgun. He goes to see a psychiatrist again, but the door is locked when he tries to go into his appointment.
He should have blasted it down.
He believes this means the doctor is scared of him and was hiding a weapon in her office to protect herself. She still believes he is not a danger.
As he's literally thinking about blasting down her door.
That's the thing, though, is he thought all of this. He didn't say anything.
Mm.
Never told anybody.
So did he actually go and check and see that the door was locked?
Yeah, he went to go inside and the door was locked and he had
Probably because she was, like, on lunch or something?
Probably. Or on a phone call in her office.
Okay.
All right. So it's really weird because as smart as... Like, he's got some intelligence going for him, but he can't see, like, what's right in front of him, which is that... I guess that's just part of the disorder, huh?
Paranoia,
I
mean, yeah.
And there are different levels of intelligence. There's, like, an emotional intelligence, which he's obviously, like, semi-lacking, I want to say.
Yeah, he had a really high IQ. I don't remember what it was, but...
So did Ted Kaczynski, though.
Yeah.
So did Rory.
Nah, it was never that high.
In early June, he purchases handcuffs for locking the door to the theater, road spikes in case he is chased by police, and a first aid kit.
So he's trying to throw spike kits out while he's trying to flee?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that probably wouldn't go too well.
What was the thought that crossed his mind?
That's not the worst thought I've ever heard.
But he's going to, like, I'm going to stop and toss this out?
No, you have to set up a deployment system from the back of your vehicle, obviously.
Yep, his little white Hyundai. June 7th, not long after his purchases, James has his oral exams to move on to second year grad school. He didn't study because he has been preparing for his mission and because he wanted an unsuspicious way to drop out of school, knowing he would either be in prison or dead very soon. A few hours after taking his exams, he goes into another sporting goods store and buys a Smith & Wesson 5.6mm and a semi-automatic M&P-15, which is similar to an AR-15. He also buys a low-light sight for the M&P, perfect for the dimmed movie theater.
All right, so he's got a plan. He's got the material. He's not going to be able to see his shrink, so...
Or anything in the theater.
Well.
After his June 11th psychiatry appointment, James's doctor contacts the CU Denver Beta, the Behavioral Evaluation and Threat Assessment Team. Their job is to contact anyone reported to be a threat to themselves or others and offer support or outside referrals to those struggling with whatever issues they may have. The Beta team is not a disciplinary or police-related body, and therefore they cannot make arrests or place psych holds. Unfortunately, because James had dropped out of school, the team were no longer responsible for contacting him, and the investigation was dropped.
That just seems a little strange.
He wasn't about to let those Beta bitches boss him around.
So when it becomes not your problem like that, when you can say, he's not part of the school anymore, he's no longer on our docket, why don't they transfer something over to someone? Like, why don't they tell someone? Like, hey, this person was being considered a threat at this time. They have since stopped showing up to therapy, and we are no longer allowed to contact them because we're not part of the school. Why is there a disconnect between there and any local enforcement agency?
They really didn't have time because this was June 11th and June 19th. So they had 8 days to get police involved, and he really never gave anyone an actual, I'm going to go here and I'm going to kill people. He just said, well, I have thoughts of killing people and I want to kill people. But to actually initiate the psych hold or even getting the police involved, he would have to have actually threatened someone or someplace or had a plan.
And even if he did, it probably would have taken more than 8 days.
Yeah.
Government doesn't do anything fast.
In early June, James also started writing his thoughts down in a notebook, which he later mailed to his psychiatrist hours before the shooting to give an insight into his mind if he were to die.
Was it called Jimmy's Thoughts?
Probably. On June 13th, he spent $1,200 on ammo, 10 30-round magazines for his M&P, 100-round drum, and a laser sight for his pistol. The rifle ammo were full metal jackets, which he bought specifically to penetrate the backs of movie theater seats. June 28th, he buys another 2,500 .40 caliber rounds for his pistol and 2,500 rounds for his rifle.
Was that our issue in just the beginning? Kidding. Is that something we've just adopted right now?
But yeah. I mean, the yes. thing is, if you've received any sort of treatment, generally it does show up on. No.
I don't think so.
They don't run you for.
No.
No, I don't think there's. I don't think psychiatrists are allowed to put that record out there that there are people that have come to see them. It's like a HIPAA violation. You'd be violating that patient's right to privacy. So,
well, I mean, basically,
unless you're, I guess your psychiatrist could submit papers to say that you're, you know, crazy.
You shouldn't own a gun.
Yeah,
I mean, but, I think that would be a good call on this part, at least. But
yeah. But there's no way to actually look in to see if anybody's actually gotten therapy unless it's court-mandated therapy.
Well, I did not mean to get us off on that. So anyways.
The end-all be-all is he had no plan, or he didn't tell anyone his plan. He had no targets, and he had no place or time or anything set, so there's really nothing anyone could do. You can't prove it. You can't call the cops and be like, he's going to shoot up somewhere, and they're going to be like, where? Like, oh, I don't know. He didn't tell me that. He just told me he's going to kill people.
You should stake out all the darkest places with the darkest themes, maybe even the darkest titles.
You're going to have to look into the Juggalos and the Dark Carnival of Souls?
Ah, shit, we went the wrong way. Mm. Oh, shit, we were supposed to go to the Dark Knight movie.
But we busted 400 Juggalos.
And I'm covered in Faygo.
Drinking bleach for whatever reason.
Why would you drink? That's how bad the Faygo is. They're drinking bleach instead of Faygo.
No, they just mix it in there. They mix it the bleach in with the Faygo because it gets you super fucked up.
Fuck yeah.
All right, Juggalos out there.
Whoop whoop.
Here's another.
God damn it. How many episodes do we now have with a whoop whoop in it?
July 1st is the first time James is seen with his iconic orange hair purchasing another sight for his pistol. July 2nd, he buys a bulletproof vest, pants, and cup, and more knives.
Fair to say he was not confident in his ability to look down the barrel of that gun without a lot of sights on it.
Yeah.
You know, there's like this old Gary Larson cartoon where it's like nature's warning signs, and it's got this like mean barking dog and like, I can't remember, like a rattlesnake. And it's got a picture of this guy who's got just guns poking out of a trench coat, and he's got a fucked up weird hat on. I think that kind of needs to be like a judgment. Like that should be hung at every register in a sporting goods store. It's like nature's warning signs. If you see someone that comes in here every 3 days and buys knives and he's got pink orange hair.
Like if Neo fucked Iggy Pop.
Yeah. Say something.
He did a lot of this online. Most everything besides the gun themselves he bought on websites.
The internet's to blame.
July 3rd, he buys fuses and a launch control receiver similar to the ones used in large firework shows. He begins learning how to create his own bombs. On July 11th, he buys another Glock 40 caliber. Around this time, he begins casing the Century 16, figuring out which theater had the least amount of exits but the most seats. He also locates the closest police station and calculates the response time to the theater. July 14th, Jane purchases all of the ingredients for homemade bombs at a local chemistry or hobby shop, and he builds the bombs on July 16th, and he begins setting them up around his apartment.
So his plan is to blow up his apartment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got a whole thing. I'll get into it. On the morning of July 19th, James awakes and begins setting the tripwires up. His plan is to set a CD player to play silence until he is at the Century 16, then blare music as loud as the speaker will go, so his neighbors will complain. Tripwires set up just past the door, so when police enter his apartment for the noise complaint, they will trip the bombs. His other super laughable idea is to set up another CD player in the parking lot along with a remote control toy tank. He believed the music would draw people in and then they would notice the tank and want to play with it. And unbeknownst to them, the tank remote is actually the remote to the bombs and they would explode when the person tried moving the tank.
He's just got this boombox out there playing, what's that song? It's like, never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. You know that song?
No, I bet.
Something Whisper.
I honestly think that the music that he is blaring out of his apartment in order to get people to call the police. Yeah, I was going to say ICP.
No, he actually really liked techno. Techno was his favorite music, so it was like Tiesto. So
it's just, it's actually probably just Skrillex.
So annoying.
Probably.
Was Skrillex?
Well, someone stole the CD player, but they left the tank.
I'm gonna draw them in with this random CD player playing, and they'll be so distracted by the tank that they'll forget that there's a CD player out there making noise.
And they'll want to play with the remote control tank, obviously, that's sitting in the parking lot.
I would have thought it was a booby trap. If I saw that sitting
that's
out,
what
I'd be
it
like,
was.
They're trying to catch me.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And
but
it didn't
more like you know, the box and the stick and the carrot that catches the rabbit, like one of those types of traps.
Yeah.
This is very Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, it's really not well thought out.
Well, you can kind of see how his thinking was at this point.
I liked the idea to blow up his own apartment, though, with the tripwires and the cops, and that's just an awesome plan.
Well, these are two separate, but they're going to blow up the same apartment. Yeah. So either one's going to happen or the other, and
a fail
not
safe?
The toy tank.
it's a plot twist.
A plot twist. He thought it was a failsafe.
Yeah, he's just got this image of cops getting ready to bust down his door, and some little kid's like, oh, gee, Willikers, a tank. And he picks it up, and it just, boom, blows up the apartment with the cops out in front of it.
No, the cops open the door like, hey, stop, guys. We got a tripwire here.
Yeah.
Hold up. Boom!
This kid's a good Batman villain.
He set them up all over his apartment, like, as soon as you walked in, they were in the living room. So, like, if someone opened the door, they would have been like, oh, nope, not going in there.
I would have just set up a little jack-in-the-box right on the front doorstep. Someone picks it up and cranks it. That'd be way more epic than his stupid little toy tank or his trip lines or any of that bullshit.
I don't know, they're both pretty jokery.
After an all-day affair setting up the bombs, James takes a Vicodin around 11 p.m., assuming he will be shot or attacked, and it will help keep him shooting through the paint. He loads his car with the weapons and drives to the Century 16.
One Vicodin, please.
Little known fact out there, drug users. Vicodin makes you impervious to bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Basically a bulletproof vest.
Basically, so if you're going to go get shot...
Well, the thing is, he was wearing a bunch of bulletproof everything. So if he did get shot and he had a Vicodin, I mean, he could fight through the pain of a bullet hitting you through Kevlar.
Way to bring it back to Earth, Katie. Go ahead and continue on with your story.
I'm just saying that Vicodin would have been more useful literally in a little pocket over his heart to deter a bullet than to actually take away pain.
Well, nothing happened, so he didn't really need it anyways.
That's the sad part.
So he enters the Century 16 around 11:30 p.m., politely holding the door open for someone behind him. He got his ticket to the midnight premiere of The Dark Knight Rises and entered Theater 9, where 400 people were waiting for the movie to begin. Before he took his seat, he pulled out his cell phone, pretending to get a call. He walked out the exit door leading to the parking lot where his car was. On the way out, he placed a piece of plastic over the door's latch so he could easily get back inside. Back in his highly tinted car, James put on all of his tactical gear. He makes one last phone call to the university's crisis hotline, hoping for one last sign he shouldn't go through with the massacre. No one answers, and the call is disconnected after a few seconds. James gets out of the car, guns in tow, headphones in place. He turns up his techno music on his iPod, pulls the fuse out of the can of tear gas, and enters the theater. He walks over and stands just beneath the screen and throws the tear gas into the crowd and begins firing. His first shots are with his shotgun, and he drops that once he is out of ammo. He then begins shooting at people trying to escape the theater with his rifle. He claims that he could not see well with his gas mask on and was firing indiscriminately, but based on the bullet trajectory, this is untrue. He's standing opposite of the aisle to exit the theater, first so he can shoot people trying to run, and second so he is safe from people attacking him because they were too focused on getting out. He eventually makes his way up the aisle, shooting people hiding beneath the seats. At one point, his rifle jams from an overloaded magazine. He still has his pistols, but he really wanted to use his rifle to cause the most fear and damage to everyone in the theater. Fortunately, he doesn't know enough about guns to unjam his rifle, pausing under one of the aisle lights to get a better look. Once he figures out he isn't going to fix it, James casually walks back out of the theater through the same exit door, drops his rifle in the blood-soaked ground, and strolls over to his car.
This guy is a real dumb fuck. He didn't even really know what his gun was like.
So what, is he trying to leave, or is he just going to hang out in his car?
No, he's leaving. He's okay. Done.
That was it?
That was it.
He bought how many hundreds of bullets? And wow, that's crazy. Just because his rifle jammed.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, okay.
He didn't.
That's it.
I feel like this whole time, like, he didn't really, like, want to do this.
Well, I mean, there's this like, theory where with people that have kind of disorders like that, kind of even like the kids from Columbine, it's boring. It doesn't give you that thing that you thought it was going to give you. So after a few attempts at satiating whatever you need to satiate, it just becomes another thing that you've done, and it doesn't actually do anything for you. Like, the Columbine kids wandered around, thought it was going to be so cool killing kids, realized it's boring. It's the same thing over and over again. So
yeah.
What do you think of that, Katie?
I totally agree. Everyone in the theater said he was totally emotionless. He just kind of stood there and shot, and then it was over.
Just wasn't what he thought it was going to be, and he was over it,
yep. Basically.
And at that point, of course, you're too much of a pussy to shoot yourself in the fucking head.
Mm-hmm. All right, so he's back out of his car. What's going on in the theater? Where are the police? What's happening?
The first call to 911 came in at 12:38, and police were dispatched a minute later. In all, 12 people were killed and 58 were wounded. 76 shots were fired in total, 6 from his shotgun, 65 from his rifle, and 5 from his pistol. The theater was covered in blood and bodies. The youngest victim, Veronica Moser, was only 6 years old and was shot 4 times.
So he shot what? 70 people were injured, right? Total?
Mm-hmm.
So he got some twofers. How many bullets did he fire?
76.
Oh, okay. I mean, so shotgun, he missed. 6 shotgun rounds. 6 can shots. Hit, I mean, 6 shotgun rounds can fucking,
I guess, hit that's true.
Tons of people.
Especially when they're sitting, yeah, all next to each other.
Yeah, they're all packed in. They're like sardines in a can.
Yeah.
Fish in a barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't trying to say he was efficient. I was just saying that it's a lot of people injured.
He wasn't. No, he was, that's, yeah, the thing, yeah, is he wasn't efficient. If anyone was actually able to shoot a gun, they would have killed so many people in this, yeah, situation.
There, so is he only a shitty shot, and that's why he's blaming it on his gas, no, mask?
His dumb fuckery, basically not knowing how to actually use his weapons, is what basically saved most people's lives.
There's so many people that have looked at this and been like, if this dude knew anything about shooting a gun or it had any tactical, any sort of training, there would have been so many people that had died. Like, 12 is a lot, but it would have been probably upwards of hundreds. There's 400 people in this theater, and then if he had been able to plan this better and pull it off better, there would have been a lot of fucking dead people.
No, pull it off worse, I would say, if he'd been able to,
yeah,
make worse things happen. If he would have been able, if he would have had at least the smallest amount of knowledge, gun knowledge.
Could have achieved his dreams.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, is he probably would have got sick of it halfway through and just plotted off anyway. Okay, so he's out of his car. Cops have been called.
Yeah. Veronica Moser was 6, and her mother, Ashley, was pregnant and shot twice. She lost her baby and was paralyzed. Gordon Cowden was shot and killed while trying to get his 2 daughters to safety. They both survived. Jonathan Blunk and Alexander Teves both lost their lives when they dove on top of their girlfriends after the shooting began. Both women survived. These are only a few of the stories of the 70 victims killed or injured. Hundreds, if not thousands, of lives, those who were in the theater, families, and first responders on the scene were forever changed by James Holmes.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. So, all right, so everyone shows up. I remember watching the news, like, they'd have stories of the survivors and stuff like that. And they interviewed the dad of one of those boys that dove on his girlfriend to make sure that she didn't get killed, and it was fucking heartbreaking. Like, he was like, that's the boy I raised. That's the way it was. It couldn't have gone any other way. And it was like, fuck, dude, you really believe
it?
Yeah, like, you knew your kid that well that he was just going to be, like, he was going to save this person's life because that's who he was. Like, that's fucked.
That's intense.
Mm-hmm.
After leaving the theater, James walked to his car and began to remove his gear. 2 officers checking the scene noticed him in SWAT gear standing by his Hyundai. They assumed he was an officer at first glance, but quickly realized he was not wearing police-issued gear. Once they knew they were staring at their shooter, they approached and James surrendered immediately.
He could have gone out suicide by cop so easy, sitting there in fucking SWAT garb. All he had to do was raise his gun and they...
That's the thing, is I don't like suicide by cop either, because that fundamentally changes the police officer as well. Like, if you're going to do it to yourself. Like, get it done. Get it out of the way. Don't ruin someone else's life because you're suicidal.
The scene at the Century 16 was complete and utter chaos. There were so many wounded victims that police officers began loading people into their cruisers and taking them to the hospital. After arriving at the jail, James requested a court-appointed lawyer and asked officers if he killed any children. He said he was remorseful about 6-year-old Veronica's death. After the bombs were removed from his apartment, officers found absolutely nothing of importance there. James's life in jail was spent in ADSEG, completely isolated, out of fear inmates would kill him. He seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, he basically gets to be alone all the time now with his own weird thoughts.
Yeah. After 5 or 6 weeks, thousands of women had written letters to James expressing their feelings of love and admiration, usually attaching a photo of themselves and money. Over 3 years, James received over $4,000.
Fucking psychopathic women.
I mean, it's the ultimate bad boy fantasy.
Give me a break. Give me a fucking break.
Break me off a piece of that bunch of dead bodies.
That's all this fucker wanted.
On November 11, 2012, James had a major psychotic break. At around 4:30 a.m., he climbed to the top of his bed, facing the wall. After a few minutes of contemplation, he went completely stiff and let himself fall backwards onto the concrete floor. In some interviews, he claims he was trying to get the bad thoughts out of his head. After being moved to the suicide watch cell, James continued to run headfirst into the padded walls, not eating or drinking for several days. He was taken to the emergency room and later returned, where the same behavior continued. He was once again taken to the ER, where he was finally prescribed some long-needed antipsychotics. He was returned to jail November 20th, and his behavior went back to normal.
So he wasn't, for the whole time he was being held there, he was not on antipsychotics?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In March of 2013, James's defense lawyer had drawn up a plea deal. He would plead guilty to all of his charges to avoid the death penalty. And this is something I've never heard happening before, but the prosecution said, no thanks. We're going for the death penalty. Fuck this guy. He's gonna die.
Good for them.
If he's having all these issues once he's in jail and they put him on the antipsychotics and all this, why wouldn't the defense go for an insanity plea?
We're getting there.
Okay.
So, on May 13th, his plea was officially changed to not guilty by reason of insanity. NGRI cases are a little different in Colorado than most states. Usually the defense is responsible for proving insanity at the time of the crime. But in Colorado, the prosecution is actually responsible for proving both insanity and guilt. Or not insanity. For proving sanity and guilt.
So that seems like it could be a pretty tough thing to actually prove if someone's kind of dead set on seeming insane, right?
Mm-hmm. Once the trial began, James stood before the court with 166 charges, 24 counts of first-degree murder and 140 counts of attempted murder, each charged twice, one with deliberation and once, and one for extreme indifference.
What does that mean?
So with deliberation is that he went in there to kill people, and with extreme indifference is that he went in there to kill people. He had extreme indifference to these people's lives, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
He also had one explosive charge and one sentence enhancement charge. The judge called on two expert witnesses, forensic psychologists, to interview James and give an unbiased opinion on his legal sanity at the time of the crimes for both prosecution and defense. Only one psychiatrist, the defense's, found James insane at the time of the shooting. While the judge agrees he was psychotic, he found him competent to stand trial.
Good for them. Once again, keeping people in prison where they belong.
So basically they're implying that even if he had these issues, that he still knew what he was doing and intended to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the jury still has to decide if he's sane or if he's insane, but he was found competent, so he's got to stand trial.
Okay.
So the jury selection began on January 20th, 2015. 9,000 people were summoned for the pool, the most people ever called for a trial. It was eventually worked down to 12 members and 12 alternates. The first trial to take place was both the sanity and the guilt trial. If the jury found James sane at the time, then they had to find him guilty or not guilty of all the crimes. After the trial, the jury deliberated for roughly 12 hours on all 166 counts. So they basically took enough time to fill out 166 verdict sheets.
All of them guilty, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was found guilty on all 166.
After they proved him sane?
Yeah, they found him sane and then they were like, nope, guilty. Because they did all the deliberation in one go. So if they found him sane, they deliberated guilty or not guilty. If they found him insane, then he was not guilty and got to go free. Not free, but he had to spend his time in a mental hospital.
So is he still sitting on death row right now in Colorado?
So the next trial was a penalty trial. The jurors first had to hear aggravating factors and were given a list of five, such as were more than two people killed, did the defendant intentionally harm a child, factors, with only one needing to be chosen for the death penalty to be on the table. They then heard mitigating factors and finally the aggravating versus mitigating factors. The jurors found 4 of the 5 aggravating factors to be true, and the jury then was tasked with sentencing. On August 7, 2015, James Holmes did not receive the death penalty. Instead, he was sentenced to 12 consecutive life without possibility of parole and 3,318 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's going to rot.
It's one of the longest sentences in history, U.S. history.
I feel like this is an example of semi-justice. Like, on 160 counts, he got 3,000 years. There's no possible way that anyone could actually live that sentence.
In total, he got like 4,500, because life sentences are 99 years.
So
he got 12 of those.
So, yeah, it just... 12 life sentences is literally just a burden on the American taxpayer.
I mean, he would have been if he was on death row, too, though.
All the appeals and all the bullshit, he would have been on there for years anyways. More than likely, this piece of shit's going to find a way to eventually off himself anyways.
Yeah. Oh, well. So, thus ends the saga of James Holmes?
I have one little bright side story.
Okay, let's hear the brighter side of James Holmes massacring a group of people.
After the sentencing, he was transferred over to Colorado State Penitentiary, and he was attacked there. Somehow, another inmate slipped away from the guard and got a hold of James, getting some good punches in while James's guard looked on, quote, unable, or air quotes, unable to call for help because his radio was dead. More air quotes.
It's disappointing that this guy hadn't had a couple of minutes to fashion some kind of jailhouse shim or shiv.
Jailhouse shims are how they keep
the jailhouse shims.
The inmate that attacked James later came out with an apology letter. He said he was sorry for not killing James and sending him to hell.
I like the way this guy thinks.
The apology.
Except that he forgot to make a shiv.
James now sits in the United States Penitentiary, Allenwood, which is likely where he'll be until the day he dies.
Well, that is actually a fairly decent silver lining. Maybe someday we'll have an update episode where he gets a little more mortally injured.
Anyway, James Holmes, what a fucker. Killed a bunch of people. Shot a bunch of people, lived through it.
Until Las Vegas, he was the largest mass shooting in U.S. history.
Now we keep him in the dark.
Yeah, they should really just toss him in a pit. Well, I guess they kind of did. I wouldn't call Allenwood.
Yeah, USP Allenwood.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that a real nice place.
It's a pit in the dark.
It doesn't, I looked on the website and it didn't look that bad. They have to work and they get time to shower, and then get time to shower before bed, and then they go to bed.
It's prison, so it's not a good place.
It's not a good place, but it could be worse.
I want it to be like in Kung Fu Panda, where they had Tai Shu or whatever, the big blue tiger thing strapped down in the bottom of the pit. He still found his way out, but
yeah, we don't want that.
It was long, brutal.
So Kung Fu Panda was just an allegory for the James Holmes story, is what you're saying?
I would have to actually reevaluate it a little bit more before feeling comfortable putting that title on it. But you never know. You really never know. Maybe we can dig into that on another podcast some other time.
Kung Fu Panda and the James Holmes story?
Kung Fu Panda and how it relates to true crime.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the episode. You can always reach us on our social medias. That's Four Corners Crimecast on Facebook and at Four Corners Crimecast on the Instagrams.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is spelled with an F-O-U-R.
And
not our a number.
Email, fourcornerscrimecast@gmail.com. That's F-O-U-R cornerscrimecast@gmail.com.
And you can follow Rory on Twitter at The Real Donald Trump.
That makes me feel bad.
That's the one thing we don't have is Twitter, so don't try and follow us on Twitter.
No, tweet us at Real Donald Trump.
Tell us we suck at Real Donald Trump.
Say literally anything on Donald Trump's Twitter feed about us. That'd
he
be
will
okay.
Block you, though.
That's all right. I would wear it with pride that Four Corners Crimecast got blocked on Twitter by Donald Trump.
By the Donnie? Oh, yeah.
Everybody can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Papa Rory or on Facebook.com/Papa Rory.
Is that really your Facebook?
I have fucking no idea.
And you can follow me on Instagram. That is slammedsunny_420. And don't add me on Facebook. Fuck that.
Look
bullshit.
Up Jake Sanders on Facebook. Give him a follow.
Only if you want to see a picture of Katie Renner. Certainly not a common name.
No, I've never met Jacob Sanders in my entire life.
Do we want mine?
Yeah.
My Instagram is at Katie Renner, and my Facebook is krenner666, I believe.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening. It's been Four Corners Crime Cast. Have a good one.
Have a good motherfucking week, you motherfuckers.
Talk to you next week.
Well, I'm going to quote him right here. According to David Renner, and I quote, "Them big gorilla boys, stay away from them. They frat boys, no good. Them quiet nerds, they good boys."
That's going to be the outro to this episode.